Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Hey, everyone. First off, thanks for listening and subscribing, as always. But before you continue on this episode, I am asking that you go to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, and a review. You can put whatever the hell you want in the review. You can put a movie review, your best pick for the Oscars, best picture, whatever the hell you want. I don't care. Just write something, because this would be a massive help to us and our iTunes ranking and our standing amongst other movie pods. This would be a big help to us. If you do this, it leads to bigger and better things for us to give you much better content. Thank you. Enjoy the episode.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not
entertained? Deacon, our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 128. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins, 2 weeks out from the Oscars. Great episode ahead of you here. We will be ranking the top 10 worst Best Picture nominees since 1990. We are going to do worst winners, but the list would probably be the same. It'd be Crash 1 through 10. And then, yeah, we're reviewing the Lego movie, the second part. Get it?
Oh.
Now I get it.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we're the second Lego movie? I thought it was Ninjago today.
What if you went down that road and you're just like, wait.
What we watched is better than Ninjago.
The second part is actually the title of Jeff when he eventually gets a mohawk.
Yes.
You can get a two-part haircut.
Oh, dude, that's a good one. My brain is, I feel awful. Let me just put it that way. I don't know what I have. Something going on. I have a bad sore throat. I went to urgent care last night. Did a little swabby swab. I definitely do not have strep. So it might just be some sinus stuff. But you know what? I'm going to say for the fifth time, this is my flu game. But this is like my flu game if Jordan pooped his pants. Instead of putting up how many points, he just stepped on the court and shat his pants, and then Scottie Pippen had to cradle him off with like poopy britches.
So like Paul Pierce's game, you mean?
this is the sickest you've ever sounded doing the pod. You do sound very sick. So
I felt worse at other times. I just feel out of it. Jeff, cut this if I'm divulging too much information, but you shared a screenshot today of potential interviews for us going forward in the future.
Yes.
I need to say there is a white whale on that.
There is. No, that's big not time. Really too much. There is a white whale. No guarantees, though. Let's just put it that way.
No guarantees, but this name was just slipped in amongst other names who are good actors. Some people I haven't heard of, too. I mean, I'll just throw that out there. But this name, just casually in the middle of it, like you're almost like, is this the same so-and-so that you're talking about?
It was like Richard Grieco, Oprah, Donnie Bonaducci. Like, it was just like, it was a really weird grouping of people for us anyway. Like we immediately as a group called it out, like that's the first thing we saw. But I think to anyone else, it's like, oh yeah, that's a natural progression of a list.
There is a story when we got the Barstool. Frankie, who films all the pizza reviews for Dave, apparently the old way back when there was an old booking person, they sent a bunch of names to Frankie like, hey, would you like these people for pizza reviews ever? And it was like known name guy, you know, showrunner for the Modern Family spinoff, ABC Family actor, Oprah. And then it's like a bunch of other people. He goes, Oprah. He goes, yeah, I'll take Oprah. We can get Oprah. They go, oh, no, she's in New York sometimes. Just, you know, I was curious if you'd ever want Oprah if she ever wanted it. It's like, yeah, probably would have taken Oprah. It should have been a given.
I would rather interview this person we're talking about than Oprah.
Agreed.
And that's no offense to Oprah, but I don't know what I would ask to Oprah that hasn't been asked already, but to this potential white whale, I have a list of questions that's stashed away in my sock drawer.
Again, no hopes up, but I do want to get people's hopes up for something though. There yes. will be, I don't know when, hopefully soon, Trill, from the mind of Trill Ballins, a big dog style lights, camera, barstool shirt in the vein of the big dog shirts.
So the idea is it'd be one of those comfort color pocket tees, because I think the comfort color shirts are my favorite. I think they're the higher quality ones. No offense to like retro Joe's like polyester t-shirts, but whatever. And the pocket would have our logo on them, and then the back would be a very generic big dog, as to avoid the litigators over at Big Dog Inc. pointing at it and saying, yes, so what? I fucking listen to LCP. Or something like that. May not put the F word in there, because we want people to be able to wear this shirt to church. So
what if we like call our shot and we have it say like, hey Thanos, how does it feel to be dead, you dumb bitch? Or something like that.
He's got a glove. Hey, Big Dog should our big dog have an infinity gauntlet?
Yes, 100% we have to make that.
He's pointing at it, he's like, your wife listens to LCB ... with me.
We might need a name for our big dog though. We can't call it Big Dog.
Hercules.
Really, really the big dog.
Where is that? That cool cat, really. So
Barenthal.
Yeah.
Barenthal the big dog.
But yes, perfect. Yes. No, actually I want that to be it.
So yeah, keep that in mind. Big dog shirts. And this is only happening because you guys really did follow through on the Balloon Jerry shirts. You did buy them, and we had multiple people in the merchandise side of Barstool like, what's Balloon Jerry? Why did these sell? We had to explain what it was, and they're like, okay. didn't get the answer they expect, and they just moved on and acknowledged that we sold a good amount of them.
We just want to release shirts that put you in the most uncomfortable position explaining it to somebody else at John Barleycorn's at 2 a.m.
The fuck is that? That reference flew right over my head.
It's a Chicago it's a frat bar. I don't know how to describe it. It's very fratty. It's like a Wrigleyville Lincoln Park sort of young 20s establishment. Like
you ever go to Murphy's?
You get your degree from Iowa and they just dump you off in John Barleycorn's.
Jesus Christ.
So we do have a lot to get to, so we're just going to get right into it. Oh, I do want to know, there will be – I feel like I shouldn't tease this just in case it doesn't happen, but no, it's happening. There will be an Oscars electric chair involving myself, Ken Jack, PFT, Barstool. If you don't know him, Barstool Sports is newest gambling person and winner of Rough and Rowdy 7, Marty Mush. Might have some appearances from Big Cat as well. It's going to be gambling centric. We're not really totally sure what's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of gambling, a lot of us tweeting and Instagramming the Oscars while we talk to you, chat about it. It'll be during the Oscars live on Periscope and Facebook and all that shit. So in the planning process, it'll be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. A lot more to come on that. I want everyone, though, to do a big favor. We are looking at our iTunes rankings, and it's good. The rankings are good. They're not great. And a significant amount of people less than we have, not just on Reddit, but who listen to the pod, have rated and reviewed this podcast. That's a shame. I mean, like a very, very small percentage of the people who listen to this podcast have rated and reviewed it on iTunes. So do us a favor. Stop this. Go into iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating and leave a review. Leave a review of Lego Movie. Give your thoughts on the Lego Movie. How about that? Or tell us who you think's going to win Best Picture. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, tell us who you think's going to win Best Picture. put fucking Garfield in there. I don't care. Make up a movie. It doesn't matter. But just do that, because if we become higher on the rankings, which we're pretty high right now, we're in good shape. Had a big meeting today, in very good shape. But the higher we get, the more stuff we can do. So go ahead and do that. Thank you. That's a big favor from us. That was a genuine ask of a favor from us.
I would also like if you went on the ratings and just did the Stephen A. Smith take a look, y'all, image underscore 4346.jpg.
Oh, do that. I don't care. I actually don't give a shit what you write. Just write something. Okay, so thank you. Again, a genuine favor ask from us to you. It's free, too. It costs nothing. First up, this is a bit of thank you to Disney for dropping this trailer before we record, and that is Frozen 2. The teaser for Frozen 2 was released out of nowhere this morning. Two times in a row now, Disney's released trailers. Nobody knew about it. The other one being the infamous Aladdin trailer now, which came out on Sunday. This one, also surprise, the reaction to this, much better than the reaction to the Aladdin trailer, though. People do seem pretty excited about this Frozen 2 teaser, which has no dialogue, but is a little darker, a little more grim than the first trailer. I don't really have much of an opinion on it, because it's just really nothing there, but it looks nice. That's like all I can say. It looks nice.
The Snyder cut of Frozen. Finally, what everyone wanted.
I think this is the perfect teaser trailer in my mind. I'm not the biggest Frozen fan. I like Frozen, but Moana was the better recent Disney animated musical. But in terms of teaser trailers, it seems like all we get are teaser trailers like the first Aladdin one where you just saw the cave and the lamp and you got nothing out of it, right? Or you get teaser trailers that are basically full trailers and you get a sense of the plot. And this one, you watched and you got to see the movie, you got to see enough action from the movie, but you didn't know anything that was going on at all. You didn't know why Elsa was diving in the water or any of the other things that happened in the trailer. I don't remember. So it actually made me curious as to what's going on in the world of what's the magical kingdom they live in?
Rivendell.
Denmark. Yeah, that's right. Rivendell?
Seems like that's wrong. Hang on.
Riverdale?
Are we talking about Archie? Did you watch like...
Oh, Rivendell's Archie? Middle Earth. What the fuck am I talking about?
I thought this one was like Fjordstadt.
I combined something Iceberg. Dale and Rivendell. And it's in Norway.
Well, what's the town? Arendelle? Is that it?
Or yes. Something like
that? Yes. That's it.
Arendelle. That's it. There you go. Mm-hmm. I was close. I was very wrong, but I was still close. Okay, continue.
You know what? I'm glad they didn't do it this trailer. I would have put money on it. Frozen 2 teaser trailer would have been Olaf just being like, hey, guys, I'm Olaf. Don't forget me. Oh, where's my nose?
How could we? How could we forget him after that 20-minute fucking short before Incredibles?
Frozen 1.5.
Oh. Was that before Incredibles?
Yeah.
No, it's before Coco.
Oh, that's right. Even worse, to be honest, because Coco is a better movie.
It did make it. And I don't know. Like, it sounds weird to say that, but it made it worse than it was before Coco.
Yeah, significantly worse. Do you remember how he was like all hyped up about that short beforehand, Josh Gad, that is? And then after everyone like railed on it, he tried to be like self-aware, and he was like, "Yeah, no, like I'm just joking around with that. Like I know it was bad. Like no, you didn't. I thought it was so cool until everyone trashed you for it."
You gotta have something really mediocre to get everybody mad about like free content.
All right, especially for like a tentpole franchise or something like Disney.
But this was a well-executed teaser trailer, I thought.
I agree. She didn't give away enough. And apparently, like, some of the rumored plot lines for this is, like, they might reveal that, like, they're not biologically related, and there's a couple other ones that are flown out there. And, like, I think that's the next logical step for Frozen, right, is that you find out the sisters aren't actually related because one can, like, do magic and one can't.
Well, what happens is there's a big tie-in. Everyone takes a 23andMe DNA test. And then they log in and view the results, and it just completely fucks Christmas up.
They Josh Gad did tweet today, though. He said, I think we may have just broken the internet. Definitely not.
Nope, not even close, buddy. I was just gonna say, imagine he speaks day to day like Olaf. Like he doesn't even have a regular voice anymore. He just has to talk like that contractually.
The bar has been so lowered in terms of what people will think will actually break the internet these days in the last 2 years. I remember when things did break Twitter. You got the whale being lifted out of the ocean, but nothing big enough happens anymore that actually breaks the internet. A teaser trailer will not break the internet, Josh Gad. Sorry, I know it's hyperbole, but I'm a stickler for the phrase break the internet.
Yeah. It would have to be the next Avengers trailer would have to drop cold with no rumors whatsoever beforehand. I think that's the only like trailer that could do it. It would have to drop out of nowhere at like the perfect time, like out of football season on a Sunday at like 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. And even then, it wouldn't do it.
Break the internet actually means these days, because I take it very literally. I take it as something is popular enough that it gets enough traffic to Twitter and takes Twitter down. And I don't think that can be done anymore.
There's also a rumor, by the way, that the Avengers trailer, the next one, the final one, will air during the Oscars. I don't see that happening. I think that's too soon. I expect it to be after Captain Marvel, so the middle of March. There's also a rule with the Oscars and the broadcast that they can't have a movie trailer for a movie that's a sequel to something nominated for Best Picture, and Avengers Endgame may actually fall under that guidelines with Black Panther. So they may not even be able to show it. But there's a rumor about it. I don't believe it. Keep that in mind, though. I wouldn't get your hopes up if you see that rumor, because people are now going to take that rumor and float it around the internet as if it's fucking truth, which it's definitely not yet.
That's where the Motion Picture Academy of America draws the line.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's an actual rule for the Oscars. They can't do that. The Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, they tell you can't, like, they couldn't do a trailer for Roma 2. Like, they wouldn't be allowed to do that.
What if they just aired the trailer for the last trailer for Endgame at the end as like a post-credits to Captain Marvel, and you get more people to see it, and then you don't drop it onto YouTube or any associated channels until, like, let's say 2 weeks after the movie debuts, so you get more people to go and watch it?
Well, they did do that with Avengers. That was the Avengers trailer premiered with Captain Marvel, Captain America, excuse me. That was the post-credits scene for Captain America.
Yeah, so why don't they do that and then get a bunch of people to go see Captain Marvel?
Avengers, anything else on that front?
We started Frozen and we ended with Avengers. Conversation comes back Avengers. To Avengers.
And it's obviously, like, this is going to be a quick hitter, but the Oscars is canning 4 awards and putting them during commercial breaks. Cinematography, fucking damn shame. Film editing, makeup and hairstyling, and live action short. So obviously they want more people to watch, and they're using that as a way to get people to watch. Like, hey, it's shorter. We're not showing you these awards. But the ultimate way to get people to watch would be like exclusive Avengers trailer, but there could be rules against that. So I don't know what Disney and ABC have in mind, because they are probably the ones mostly pushing the buttons behind that, not just the Academy.
It's like in the advertising for it, they're like, special reveal, Amy Adams joins ISIS? Just like throw out the most controversial plot or headline you can to try and get more people to watch. That would be better than cutting out awards for cinematography and editing, like two of which are so instrumental to film. It's insane.
Cinematography.
At the start of the broadcast, just give out awards that are off broadcast, but do it like a graduation ceremony. And they announce the winner, and people come up and grab it and shake the hand of the dean of the MPAA. And then they post their speeches online.
What if they say, like, if there's any ties in the voting this year, you flip a coin and that's who wins? Or like you have like two editors like arm wrestle for the Oscar, making it.
They could fight over it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would get viewers. Cinematography, the top two people will fight.
You have like Barry Jenkins fighting Alfonso Cuarón, like bare knuckle brawl.
I'd tune in. Next trailer I want to talk about. This one's getting a lot of buzz. A lot of buzz from Academy Award winner Danny Boyle for his movie Yesterday, which is a movie about a man who is a failing musician, gets hit by a bus on his way home from work or his way home from something, wakes up, teeth knocked out, all fucked up, finds out the Beatles don't exist in this new reality, and proceeds to play Beatles songs for people and becomes the biggest pop star in the world, as he is the only one to know Beatles songs. He remembers them by heart, which is obviously, if he didn't, that would suck. But he's a good musician. He does that, becomes a major pop star. Lily James is in this. She's probably the most recognizable face. Also Kate McKinnon. This movie, I'll tell you what, I would have read that synopsis, I would have said, fuck off. I've been like, no way. Trailer was delightful. And it's Danny Boyle. I am very into this movie.
I like it. I've often thought about what would happen if they dropped a songbook of an artist in my hands and that person never got around to it. Like 10 years ago, if they would have given me, I don't know, who's a good songwriter now?
Right. Name now?
Some, You just name somebody. I don't know. If like 20 years ago, they would have dropped off like with a 14-year-old me, like a bunch of John Mayer songs. Like, could I do anything with that, or would I just sit on them? I'd be like, this sheet music's fucking stupid. But does that mean that in this universe, the mannequin challenge doesn't exist?
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Wow.
Or Maurice Rummond.
Or would their song be like another name?
That's a woke take, I might add. I haven't seen anyone tweet that at us.
What if you got dropped back, but the only album you remembered is Yellow Submarine? Would anyone even give you a chance?
Yellow Submarine, no, because that was such a shitty one.
Yeah, that was like their worst album, right?
I'm trying to think of, I know it's just a movie, but if you came out in like an American Idol, or what's one of those talent shows, like Britain's Got Talent?
Yeah.
And you just played a guitar version of like something or Blackbird, like what would the people just be like, I don't want to hear this. Play some Kylie Minogue. This movie better have just Yoko Ono being a random person, by the way.
Yeah.
Like it better have the actual Beatles and like him touring in Britain, and then there's just four guys in a pub, but they're played by the Beatles from Dewey Cox. There's Justin Long and Jack Black and all that, and they're just in Liverpool, like, oh, these songs are good. We should have thought of them.
Mark David Chapman becomes an Uber driver.
Oh. he
launches Facebook.
Also, James Corden is in this movie, and James Corden says that people are claiming that he didn't write the songs at some point. So I'm curious if there's people in this universe who start to remember the Beatles, or like there's a couple other people who remember the Beatles.
Well, what if it's the actual Beatles? Like, what if that's the twist, where it's the actual Beatles? Like, they're like, oh, that song was in my head. I just didn't get it out on paper. Couldn't communicate it.
Ooh, do the Wings not exist yet either? Or like, do these people wiped off the face of the earth, or did they just not
want
the Beatles?
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I would prefer it if Paul McCartney, John Lennon, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, aka Richard Starkey, because he was so boring, he had to create a fake name for himself. If they still exist, but they're just not famous because they never wrote the songs. And at some point he comes into contact with these four boys from Liverpool who are all, all just taking a different path in his life. What, if that John Lennon Imagine poster doesn't exist, where he's wearing the sleeveless tank top on it with his like stupid round shades that only work for his face for some reason. What would a freshman drama student at college put on their wall in the dorm room?
Yeah, imagine that. Or imagine if Boondock Saints never came out, or Bob Marley never existed. Like, what would be on college dorm room walls?
Like, Animal House never came out, so people didn't have the Bluto poster.
Bare college walls.
Who is the, what about Phil Spector? Does he still kill people in this universe? Allegedly, or maybe convictedly? I don't know what his legal status is.
No, he doesn't get famous now, so he doesn't think he can get away with killing people. So in this universe, we've determined that there's at very least two less murders if the Beatles never existed. Because Mark David Chapman doesn't murder anyone, and presumably Phil Spector doesn't murder anyone. I don't know. Just food for thought. All right, sorry.
What would be a crazy plot twist is if the real Paul McCartney, like the Beatles never existed, but the real Paul McCartney does, because all when they say the Beatles never existed, it was the replacement Paul McCartney after the whole Paul has died thing. And that's the big twist.
That would be a good twist. I bet that's in there somehow. Though, I don't know, because they gave their rights to this movie, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe they don't involve that.
What's playing at the Mirage in Vegas, if not the Cirque du Soleil love show? like these are the questions I need answered.
Yeah.
Across many the universe questions. Doesn't exist either. So the world is a much better place.
Oh, that's a much better place. Yeah, they don't make that shit movie.
Much better place.
People fake love that movie so much.
Oh, I hate it so much. I hate like the fake adulation that gets.
This is a better Beatles movie. This is a better ode to their music than doing that shit. Or Bohemian Rhapsody. This is a better use of a band's music catalog than just a fucking bland biopic.
I agree. I agree 100%.
Final comment.
Well, more than anything, there are a lot of people who haven't heard of the Beatles, so it will expose their music to a wider audience. Yes.
Yeah, thank true. God. We have an ad. Ken Jack, what's the ad?
Yes, we do have an ad. This is an ad for a very special clothing company, and it comes off the heels of a very relevant news item. So take it away, unnamed reporter.
So about a month ago, you were a complete failure. Just a dumbass podcaster with no money, no anime GF, and dumb tiny meat. Now you're a fashion legend mentioned among stars like Ralph Lauren, Coco Chanel, and Ed Hardy. So Kinjak, my question to you is, what changed?
Well, there I was, walking 89 blocks home from work when all of a sudden the streetlights went out, and I got hit by Randy Quaid drunk behind the wheel of his Toyota Supra. I woke up, and there I was in my bed, buck naked. And for some reason, my underwear drawer was empty. So I went to go ask my roommate if I could borrow a pair.
Please get out of my room.
That's when I realized it. I had awoken to a world in which underwear never existed. Jeans-wearing men walked around with extremely chafed dicks and balls. Women never wore skirts for fear of creepy men. Yeah, they still exist in this universe too. Everybody had government-mandated wipes and sanitation breaks to clean the skid marks off their clothing. And worst of all...
Hello, my name is Joosh, and I will be your server at Applebee's this evening.
Yeah, Joosh, we'd like to do half-off apps, specifically the boneless wings.
Oh, I'm sorry, those don't exist.
So I spent my days perfecting the clothing that I knew and loved, until Eureka! Yes, hello, Shark Tank panel. This is my invention that I would like to present to you. Underwear.
Okay, here's the offer I'll make. I'll offer you $1 million.
Yowza!
For the entire company.
Oh.
Included in that $1 million is a salary to you of $80,000 a year for 5 years.
Lori, I'll bring you in if you like. If you'd like to come in, I'm happy to bring you in.
I'm in on Mark's offer. I like it.
You understand what's happening to you, right? If you take that deal, you get wiped out. Right now, you gave up your future. You sold your soul. You owe nothing.
Okay. You know what, Kinjak? I like your product.
I ended up getting a $750 million investment from Barbara Corcoran and ditched the terrible name Kinjak for the name I hold today, Tommy John.
A Brief History is based on the novel Push by Sapphire, in theaters July 2019. And reminder, if your big Valentine's Day surprise consists of a bouquet of supermarket roses and drugstore chocolates, then the only surprise is that you think that's memorable. Rethink what a Valentine's Day gift can be with Tommy John, the most comfortable men's and women's underwear on the planet, and a gift that's not only expected, but genuinely needed. Tommy John is redefining comfort for men and women with luxuriously soft, feather-light, moisture-wicking underwear that moves with you, not against you. With no pinching, no bunching, and no riding up, it's no wonder that Tommy John has sold over 6 million pairs. If you're still looking for a Valentine's Day gift, their limited edition loungewear and underwear, including matching his and her sets, are the perfect alternative to boring and played-out cliché gifts. And with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee... If you don't love your first pair, you'll get a full refund. So there's no excuse not to buy the gift of comfort that they truly deserve. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Shop limited edition Valentine's Day gift sets and get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/lights. That's TommyJohn.com/lights for 20% off. Only at TommyJohn.com.
Wow, what an inspirational message from a movie. So make sure to go to TommyJohn.com/lights and get some really inexpensive now underwear. That's really comfortable. They sent us some, actually, right, Jeff?
They did. Some undies. They're now me undies, but they're not me undies. They're their undies.
You say it like a pirate. They're me undies.
Yep. Thanks to them for the sponsor. Two more trailers we want to get into here. Blumhouse's Ma. I think it's how you pronounce, how you say it. I assume it's how you say it. Yeah, they say... Ma's House, starring Octavia Spencer. It's a Blumhouse horror movie. Let me pull up the synopsis. What did you think about this trailer?
My only big take from this movie is, how does this not star Brad Garrett?
To me, like, Ma, the entire time. Ma, Ray.
Ma, Ray. You do it so much better. I'm sorry.
It looks interesting. I mean, I still don't totally understand what's going on. A lonely woman befriends a group of teenagers and decides to let them party at her house. Just when the kids think their luck couldn't get any better, things start happening that make them question the intention of their host. people are dying and shit. She was like using floss to sew someone's lip shut. There's some weird shit in this trailer. It's a weird trailer. But looks freaky. I don't know. Blumhouse makes some freaky movies. I'm kind of in on it, but the trailer was long as shit too. Shows a lot in this trailer, which is never really a good sign.
Well, Blumhouse is really like super hit or miss, right? So either it's going to be really good or it's going to be nothing. And I like Octavia Spencer quite a bit, and I think that she can make something out of nothing.
I would say the correlation between trailers that show too much and the movies being good, I don't know how to tie off this thought, but they're the opposite. Rarely does a trailer show a lot and then you like the movie. Typically doesn't really work the other way around. So, let us know what you think when you see it.
I'm Googling it right now. I'm Wikipediaing it, which is basically just like watching the trailer.
Honestly. Yeah. The Hustle, the second trailer I want to talk about with Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson. There's also a trailer for the Tolkien movie, starring Nicholas Holt. Yeah. There's not much to it. There isn't much to the trailer. It just kind of teases that, you know, during the war, he began to think about, or not during the, is it during or after the war? After the war, right? He began thinking about Lord of the Rings and creating that franchise.
I wonder if they're going to cast Christopher Lee at all in this, because he's like one of the only people that met Tolkien, and they met during the war, I want to say. And I'm curious if they explore that relationship at all. Plus, Christopher Lee in general, one of the my personal all-time favorite actors. He fucking ruled. So
Chief, I got some bad news for you. Christopher Lee died
ruled,
3 years
ago. He ruled past 10.
Okay.
Extremely past 10.
But you said they're going to cast him in this movie.
I said, who are they going to cast as Christopher Lee, my brother?
Oh, yeah.
Take that sick-ass conjecture out of here. I do not think Christopher Lee's alive.
I didn't think you did, but the way you said it, I was like, damn, we have to break this news to him here? This is really sad.
Said, who are they going to cast as him? Because it would have been a cool story.
Okay. No, it's okay.
Cast Daniel Day-Lewis. Bring him out of retirement. He could do a good Christopher Lee.
He actually would be a really good Christopher Lee.
He absolutely would.
The Hustle with Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson. This is a remake... A gender swap remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. This trailer looked like a piece of shit. I'm going to be honest with you right here. This trailer did not look good. And I don't dislike Rebel Wilson. I'm not the world's biggest Anne Hathaway fan in terms of her roles. I think she's an incredibly good actress. This just doesn't. Trailer didn't work for me. Give it a chance. We'll see the movie. But the trailer did nothing for me to really intrigue me to want and go see this one.
Yeah, it was just nothing in general. I think Rebel Wilson, for me, her kind of gimmick wore off after Pitch Perfect. And I don't think I've liked really much of her role since then. And she's going to have that self-aware rom-com movie. I forgot the name of it already. Like, Isn't It Beautiful or something, right?
Isn't It Romantic?
I liked the trailer for Hustle. Just going to throw that one out there. I thought it looked interesting.
What did you think was interesting about it? I thought it was pretty boilerplate.
I was interested in one Anne Hathaway's British accent. Seemed very, very fancy. It's a very fancy British accent. And I like her in every role she's in. I was going to say,
you are a big Anne Hathaway fan.
I think she's been in bad movies, but I can't remember when she's done a bad job of being in a role herself. Except maybe, no, she's good as Catwoman. I can't get the image of her crashing through a brick wall on a stupid ass motorcycle and firing a Roman candle at a villain they've been building up over the last 2 hours and just offing him that way.
Oh God.
I would imagine this movie does come down to Rebel Wilson and your ability to buy into her character. Because since Pitch Perfect, she really has been just Fat Amy. That's just what she's been.
I think this would have been better, honestly. And I don't dislike Rebel Wilson. I think she's been enjoyable in some roles she's been in. Her TV show wasn't that good. And then that movie she did with Dakota Johnson wasn't good either. But the Pitch Perfect movies were better when she was in a smaller role. And this kind of scares me of her being in a bigger role. And it's not her, it's her character. She plays the same character in every movie, like you were saying. And I somehow wonder if this movie would potentially be more interesting if they got like someone who is a little less, I don't know. I don't want to say like physical comedy, but there was some physical comedy in the trailer, like when they're trying on the dress or whatever. I'm trying to remember it.
She tackles Liam Hemsworth for sex.
Yeah. In the rom-com movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, if you want to make it like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, you have a pairing of Steve Martin and Michael Caine. And, you know, why not get somebody who is like maybe more of a bigger name and like an Anna Kendrick of sorts?
Ugly Betty. Where's she at these days?
America Ferrera?
In Superstore.
Yeah, true. Coming to America.
But that being said, it's like I think this does look a little interesting. It probably is not going to be good, but I wasn't like completely turned off by this trailer.
Fair rebuttal. We should never all agree, even though we almost always do.
No, but you guys know I lean more towards like rom-coms and these type of movies than you guys do. Like I like them more than you guys.
That's fair.
I liked Love Actually, whereas you guys said it was doo-doo.
All right. I think it's just an okay
movie. I didn't say it's doo-doo.
Okay. Well, you wasn't on your top 10 Christmas movies list. So by like deduction of like how people judge us for our list on Twitter, you guys said it's doo-doo.
Infinity War is not on my top 10 Christmas movies either. I don't think that movie's doo-doo.
Well, if you were judging us, if you were like one of the guys judging us on Twitter, us saying the movie's doo-doo is basically what we're saying when we don't have it on the top 10 list.
Boy, people judge us on Twitter.
Mad people. I think people are going to like the list today, though. I'm liking the worst Best Picture nominees. Quick before we move on.
Sorry, I got a Hall's lozenge in my mouth.
People understand.
I'm charging up.
Don't apologize.
Charge up.
I want you both to guess the highest box office number for a Rebel Wilson movie.
It's got to be Pitch Perfect. One. That's my guess. Wait, no, she's definitely like a bit role in something bigger.
Is it an animated movie?
No, it's live action. But guess the movie and then the highest total. You probably won't guess the movie, so just guess the total.
And the highest total?
Just guess the highest total.
Is it a bit Bridesmaids? Like, yeah, does that count? Like Bridesmaids?
It is Bridesmaids.
Her bit part?
I was going to say that'd be my easy guess.
Bridesmaids, I'm guessing $120 million.
I'll go, it's like a wrong, 150.
It's $166 million. It's Bridesmaids. Pitch Perfect 3 made $61 million less than Pitch Perfect 2.
Damn.
But I'm just surprised she hasn't been in a movie that's made more than $200 million. That's just surprising to me.
How to Be Single.
Yeah, How to Be Single. I don't know how much How to Be Single made.
I like Rebel Wilson just because she's in Cats, and I completely support that project. And Jenny Any Dots can... can Jenny Any Dots any day if she wants. I don't care.
One more piece of news and a quick ad read, and then we'll close out news. This is the frustration reading this article was very high for me. James Cameron, who directed Titanic and Avatar, who was the fake director of Aquaman and the movie Entourage, who will be directing multiple Avatar movies and has been studying water for the last 10 years. He opened up about Aquaman. He said it was great fun, but stressed that his approach to filming underwater scenes was different. Truthfully, I could have never made that film, Aquaman, because it requires this total dreamlike
to come out.
Yeah.
Because it requires this total dreamlike disconnect from any sense of physics or reality. Oh. It exists somewhere between a Greek mythic landscape and a fairy tale landscape.
Floating rocks on his planet in unobtainium.
Not done yet. People just kind of zoom around underwater because they propel themselves mentally, I guess. I don't know, but it's cool. You buy it on your own terms. But I've spent thousands of hours underwater. I'm very literal about my underwater. It needs to look like it's real. And while I can enjoy that film, Aquaman, I don't resonate with it because it doesn't look real. Still not done. He mentioned something about whales and shit. Where's that quote? Is it on this article? All right, give me your thoughts, because this fucking reads, and I want to like James Cameron, and I'm sure I would if I met him. Actually, I have no idea. But holy shit, this sounds like a skit we would have written. Like, this sounds like a fake blog we would have written about us interviewing James Cameron.
This makes me like him more, because he's sticking to his WWE heel character. He just comes out, you know, he's in some city, and the city is called Aquaman. And he's like, and this is his intro music, by the way. Oh,
I'm James Cameron. Well, I'm an Aquaman tonight, right? You guys are a bunch of rednecks, aren't you? And they're like, boo, boo. He's like, I can smell you from here. You bunch of lazy rednecks. You don't even like real water.
Boo, we like real water, James Cameron.
No, you don't. You like fake bitch water. Boo. That's this heel thing. He just shits on everything because it's not up to his standards. And that's what makes him an auteur.
Kenji, you can give your thoughts, but I'll read the rest of the quote. I found it. He said, after saying that the film doesn't resonate with the film because it doesn't look real. And by the way, Aquaman doesn't help us with our issues of actually understanding the ocean and exploring the ocean and preserving the ocean. Though they did throw in a couple things like whales and things like that to remind us we are using the ocean as a garbage dump. So I applaud the film for that. Yeah, I couldn't have made that movie. We're doing a lot of underwater in the Avatar sequels. It's going to have such a different feel.
Dude, okay. What is he talking about? That's the main plot point in Aquaman is the fact that they want to destroy the humans because they're polluting the earth. They're polluting the oceans. That's like the fucking driver.
No, dude.
For the villain.
Well, did you see the deleted scenes? Because in the deleted scenes, I had a Carnival cruise ship dumping their poop tanks right into Aquaman's mouth, and he was just absorbing all the shit from the ocean liner.
He was like, yes, thank you for the redigested coconut shrimp, my lord.
I will take this trash to save the ocean. It was beautiful.
Oh god.
It's incredibly fucking condescending, is what it is.
I can't buy it, Trill.
He's a better filmmaker. A better anything of film than me, marketer. He's I mean, James Cameron, he's a genius. I mean, like, no doubt about it. He's a genius at what he does. That's why he's made a call. He joked too. He was like, are you impressed by James Wan's billion? He goes, have him come back to me when I made my second billion and on his way to his third billion. And like, he was joking when he said that, but like, he is a genius and he deserves that respect. But that is such a fucking condescending interview. It's almost too condescending to comprehend. Like, yeah. Do you get, like, is he that out of touch? Like, he sounds out of touch with reality.
It sounds like someone who's just pissed off that comic book movies are just succeeding, where he has to try and invent weird dumb shit like Avatar 10, where, like, I don't know, like, they're swimming underwater and fucking each other with, like, their nose hair now instead of their actual hair. Like, just because you have to try and go to these extreme lengths to make money, and the fact, and like, people are retroactively not liking your work, not like Terminator shit, but anything like that, but like Avatar specifically, like, doesn't mean you have the right to go after someone like James Wan, who, in my opinion, did put together a decently made movie, and to boot, did good underwater sequences. The CGI of the underwater, I thought, was very well done.
I like it, though. That's what I'm saying. I agree with what you guys are saying, but this makes me like James Cameron more, because he's sticking to his guns, and now I can't wait to see these underwater sequences in Avatar 2.
I mean, if he makes this no glasses 3D shit work, again, I will get him. I will bow and I will fucking do the, what is it where you do all hail and fucking bow and shit? What's your name for that?
You'll hail bow. Him.
You can do this. Yeah.
You'll curtsy.
Praise him.
Praise him. Whatever. Fuck it. I don't care. If it looks cool, that's awesome. And he's even more of a genius, but it doesn't take away from the fact that this is such a douchebag reply. I can't get over it. I actually thought it was a joke. I had to confirm it wasn't a joke because someone sent it to me. Like, that's real. Like, that's funny. That's like fan fiction. He really said all that.
Protecting your ocean, douchebag.
I do think it's funny that he's talking about the movie not resonating with him because that's not what the ocean looks like. When my reference point for what the ocean looks like is like getting my foot stuck in seaweed off the beach of Daytona Beach. And just opening my eyes for a brief second, like, oh, this is the ocean. Okay. Because the movies look fine enough, but you know what? He's a genius. And I love this character he's playing, where every movie sucks. That's not him. And especially when it's a water movie, he feels like someone's encroaching on his territory a little bit. That's how it reads, right? Back to that WWE villain type role. Kind of feels like someone else is challenging him for the Intercontinental water belt.
Yes. 100%.
But he's
so insecure, right? Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, it just feels so insecure.
No, I think he's overly secure.
If he was, he would say nothing.
I feel like there's this point where you get so mighty and powerful and have so much money that he just can say whatever he wants. No one in that industry is going to say anything.
What would be more secure? right? Would it be him saying that he didn't resonate with him, or him saying like, yeah, I thought it was great. I think I could actually learn a thing or two from James Wan. Like him saying that, I think, is more condescending and more secure.
I see what you're saying, but I don't feel like this was insecurity so much as hubris. Okay. If that makes sense.
It's not like we're new to this either. Like many people have joked and noted how he's kind of a douchebag. I mean, that's just not like, this isn't anything new. I remember Tina Fey and Amy Poehler had a joke at the Golden Globes back when Catherine Bigelow won for Zero Dark Thirty, or she won at the Oscar. I think she won at the Globes. She won at the Oscar, probably not the Globes. I'm sure they did something stupid. But they said, I haven't been really following the controversy over Zero Dark Thirty, but when it comes to torture, I trust the lady who spent 3 years married to James Cameron. And everyone laughed and guffawed at that. So again, it's not like we're at some new revelation that James Cameron's kind of an asshole, but again, this is just, it was funny. I laughed pretty hard when I read it.
Yeah, but he's like in Michael Jordan territory for me. And I've just come to realize this over the last, you know, whenever we've been doing the podcast in between our last, like James Cameron vent session. Like Michael Jordan was interviewed about accomplishments and he just said, that's a great accomplishment, but 6 titles, that's a even bigger accomplishment.
That is very similar. You're right.
I feel like James Cameron's the same thing where he's like, well, I had a lot of fun at Aquaman, but you know what? Honestly, it really didn't resonate with me because they didn't really get the rendering of the seafoam quite the right shade of teal. But he can do that because he's made so much money.
So James Cameron still churning out the quotes. I want more though. I do love it. I eat it.
Yeah, see, that's what hilarious. I'm saying. That's where I've like gone.
I know.
Now I just want a show where James Cameron watches fucking Lego Movie 2.
Oh God.
One more ad. Honey. I actually use Honey. I use all of our products, but I've used Honey for a long time, long before we started podcasting. Nobody wants to feel like they're overpaying while shopping online. I didn't. But did you know there's an easy way to always get the lowest price? It's called Honey, and everyone deserves to know about it. It's a free shopping tool that automatically saves you money by searching the internet for the best promo codes whenever you shop online. Amazon, eBay, Walmart, Macy's, Taco Bell, fucking Domino's, Barstool, I'm sure, on our website. It's an add-on. I have it on my Google Chrome. You click on it. When you go to checkout, it punches in Kohl's. You put this shit on Kohl's, you'll pay $0 for whatever you're buying. That's not a guarantee. I feel like they could probably strip the ad if I – that's not a guarantee. Let's mark that down. But Honey, you click on it. It's on your browser. It applies the various coupons that are available, takes the money off your final order price. Over 10 million members, 100,000 five-star reviews. People saved $800 million or more. Again, I've used Honey for a long time. Friends have used Honey. It's a great service. There's no reason not to add it. It's free, too. You can install it in just 2 clicks. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/lights. This is the one you got to help us out with. It's fucking free. That's 2 words. Joinhoney.com/lights, and then you'll save money wherever you shop online. All right. Thanks to Honey. Thanks for the sponsor. 2 more bits of news. The Jared Leto Joko.
Finally. That's Leto's revenge right there.
Damn it. Fuck.
Damn it. Batman Joko's at it again.
He got me. The Jared Leto Joker movie has officially been canceled.
It's me, Joko.
Canceled. Even though we haven't heard anything about this movie in a very long time. It's done. It's gone. So there's not going to be 2 Joker movies. There's not going to be fucking damaged ass Jared Leto Joker. It's over. It's gone. This is good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably good. That whole Leto Joker was... not that bad in the movie. He didn't get enough screen time, but I don't think our collective attention spans are wired enough for multiple Joker projects.
Robbie said it to me today. He said, not the worst Joker, also not good. Like there's very in between good and bad. There's he just exists.
If you went off the stills that were released, like those were pretty awful, but in the movie itself, from what little we got of it, kind of entertaining.
Yeah, he was shortchanged by a bad movie.
Did we talk to Ike Barinholtz at all about getting made out with by that Joker? I forget.
I don't think we did. We just asked about Suicide Squad 2. That was it.
Should have.
Yeah. So that's gone. That's done. A couple other quick hits. The Breaking Bad movie, which is supposed to be apparently a prequel, a Jesse Pinkman prequel. It's going to go to Netflix.
Okay.
Apparently.
I like it now.
Yeah, see? The opinion changed immediately.
Yeah. I'm fine. Aaron Paul. I like Aaron Paul. I do think this is something that Vince Gilligan's attached, right? This is something, as long as Vince Gilligan's attached, that I'm probably going to enjoy, because he does good work. But at the same time, it's hard not to like let other projects that try to do prequels and spinoffs like ruin your opinions on every other prequel and spinoff. They're not all created equal.
And two more bits of news here. Josh Brolin added to Dune. Man, the hype train for this is, we've talked about it, it's picking up. This is going to be at a level of like, it better be the best thing of all time, because the cast is incredible. Rebecca Ferguson, Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Charlotte Rampling, Javier Bardem, Oscar Isaac, Dave Bautista, Stellan Skarsgård, Denis Villeneuve is going to be the director, also writing it. And then obviously now they have Josh Brolin. So that's awesome. Great fucking casting. He is so good. He was so fucking good as Thanos. I was talking with Robbie about today. In the scenes where he just talks, like none of like the action, where he's just talking to Doctor Strange or talking to Stark, he's great in those roles. He really is so good at Thanos.
He was. And like just the scenes where he was explaining what was going on, or like the history, or like when he was talking about his planet to Doctor Strange. I thought that was so well acted, especially for a role that's primarily like mocap and voice. That had to be hard, right? Like especially coming off the heels, right, of Cable. Where Cable was such a physical acting job, going from that to mocap must have been difficult. And I appreciate how well he was able to act a three-dimensional villain, and probably between him and Killmonger.
I think probably the second best comic book villain of all time.
And they worked together in Sicario.
They did. That's a good point.
I always like when directors get actors like this, because you know like they like that actor a lot and they got something in store for him. Just overboard on it a little bit. Like our old boy... Tim Burton, Timothy Burton.
Yes.
But I think this is a good move.
Little hint, my list later on, there's a Tim Burton mainstay actor twice. Uh-oh. On my list of 10.
I got one.
Yeah, twice for me. Okay, Dune. I wish Roger Deakins was a cinematographer on that one. I will say that, like he was for Sicario with Josh Brolin and Denis Villeneuve. Last bit of news. I don't know why this one makes me feel like Trill's going to love this. Crank Yankers returning to TV, apparently. The Crank phone call puppets show from Comedy Central. Is this a, you like this?
I didn't watch it all that much. The lasting cultural impact of Crank Yankers will always be that Jon Stewart quote when he destroyed Hardball on CNN. He went on and he was talking about how the show is like awful, basically. And then they started talking about how, you know, he hosts a show and has some obligation. And then he said, well, I just host a comedy show that's followed by talking puppets, something like that. And I think that's the lasting cultural impact of Crank Yankers. So, you know, whatever.
Where's the Celebrity Deathmatch at?
Yeah, wasn't that supposed to come back?
Yeah, I thought so. That I would watch.
I don't even know what channel Comedy Central's on. I don't know.
I think Celebrity Deathmatch would lose its novelty to me after like one episode. I'd be like, oh, yeah. I don't really want to watch this anymore.
For sure.
You wouldn't know who the celebrities are. It'd be like Young Perp 69 versus like some streamer.
I was going to say that, yeah. Like Colton Burpo versus Blurp.
Ninja did a paid promotion for Happy Death Day 2 today.
Yeah, that was fun.
Good times.
Ooh, that's been getting bad reviews, fellas.
We'll see. We're removing the review, by the way. We're going to review Alita Battle Angel next week, and then we're going to review Happy Death Day to You with Large from Barstool 2 weeks after that. And we're going to do top 10 worst sequels of all time. Mm. Even if it's not the worst sequel of all time, it still toes the line enough. Okay, Lego Movie 2, officially titled The Lego Movie 2, the second part. The citizens of Bricksburg face a dangerous new threat when Lego Duplo invaders from outer space start to wreck everything in their path. The battle to defeat the enemy and restore harmony to the Lego universe takes Emmett, Lucy, Batman, and the rest of their friends to faraway, unexplored worlds that test their courage and creativity. Lego Movie 2, the second part. You know what? Because I'm nice, I'm going to make it a spoiler review just in case. The sequel to the Lego Movie, If you don't want anything spoiled, I would skip ahead right here.
To avoid spoilers for The Lego Movie 2, the second part, skip to 1 hour, 7 minutes, and 45 seconds. Also, per usual, I'm watching Guy's Grocery Games as I edit this podcast, and I want to note that anybody that falls for Guy's tricks in the beginning when he does the whole 3-2-1 thing, they're fucking sheep. All of them. Sheep. Idiots. Muppets. All right, enjoy.
All right, Lego Movie 2. This is tough. It's a tough one for me. I had a lot of fun with this movie. It's a good time. But I thought in many parts it was just simply not quite on par with the first. And even watching it in the closed off space of the movie as itself, it was hard for me not to think about the fact there have been two other Lego movies released after the original, and that those may have dampened this one a little bit. I try not to totally rate movies compared to other ones, but when it comes to a sequel or part of a series, that's almost impossible not to do. I thought there were a lot of fun parts in this. The storyline is a lot different than the original one. It's a little more heavy-handed with what it's trying to get across. There's a bit more of a message here than in the first one, which is a much simpler kind of, I think, it wasn't anything over the top. But I thought the other one was just a more well-made movie. It was more crisp, but it flowed better. There's a lot of fun self-referential stuff. Lord and Miller have done that before, self-referential in a sequel, just go see 22 Jump Street. But I thought the story here was a little more disjointed and didn't really work as much start to finish. And I didn't love everything in this one. I loved everything in the first Lego movie. It was like a 94 for me, 95. Should have won Best Animated Picture. It was one of the best movies released that year. A complete sham that the Academy fucked that one up somehow, just because there was like one scene with a real human being. This movie still looks incredible. The animation of the Legos is still unbelievable, especially when you think back to when they first announced this. And everyone, including myself, was like, this is a fucking joke. A movie about Legos. And they ended up looking unbelievable. Because they added in like CGI, but they added in the stop motion as well that made like Lego made movies so popular years ago. Overall, thought it was very well made. Had a good time with it. It's an 82. It's an 82 for me. Might move up, might move down throughout the year. It's tough to do them early in the year, but an 82 out of 100 for me. A large step down from the original, but I would still recommend it. Still a good time.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said, Jeff. I give it a 70. I'm going lower than you.
Wow.
I know. It's keep in mind, I'm still buttering it, so I still think it's worth seeing. It's a very fun movie, but I realized that what I really liked about the first Lego movie was the novelty of the Lego movie itself and the freshness of that being really a quick-witted comedy with just a lot of snappy jokes and a very talented and fun voice cast. I do think the Batman movie was very good. I don't think Ninjago was good, but I think all those three culminated in getting this movie 5 years later and me just being somewhat tired of the Lego movie. But by itself, it's fine. There were some parts that I didn't really enjoy that much. I didn't love the sleeves, super sleeves, Max Super Sleeves, or whatever his name was.
Max Danger Vest, you bitch.
Okay, Rex, sorry.
Rex Danger Vest.
Rex Danger, yeah.
Max Super Sleeves.
You knew what it was, you bastard.
I just, you know, I'm not the biggest, and I'm not like Ken Jack's a huge Chris Pratt fan. You got more Chris Pratt.
I'm cooling on Chris Pratt recently.
I remember you saying this guy. No, he if you like his roles, it's self-referential from that standpoint. That's where you get the self-referential comedy. Sorry, I'm still struggling with talking tonight. But ultimately, it didn't do enough to be more original, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be. It's a kids' movie. But I think it suffered for that. I think it was somewhat of a retread, and that's where I didn't like it.
Oh, I actually liked the movie a decent amount. Not much more than Jeff. I only gave it an 84 out of 100. I found a lot of the humor to be funny, and it had a good blend of humor that was appropriate for kids and humor that was appropriate for adults. So I imagine this being a great movie if you wanted to bring, like, I don't know, like a teenage, whatever, younger kid to. There was, like, I think four or five self-referential laugh-out-loud moments for me. And also, I enjoyed the message of this. Like, the dual message of not growing up too fast and not trying to grow up too fast is good for kids and everything. And, like, of, like, not pushing away your siblings and trying to do your own thing. That resonated particularly for me as someone with two younger brothers. And, like, immediately, specifically one scene, which I'm sure you guys can remember. We're in spoiler, right?
Yeah.
So the scene where the sister was just like, I just wanted to play with you. Like, oh, man, got the tears starting to well up a little bit. And I think it gave me a lot of nostalgia for like younger days with my brothers. And I think that's what the Lego movie is all about, right? It's a kid's movie that it still has appropriate moments for adults and has a decent lesson. Was it as good as Lego Movie 1? No, that was good. But that was going to be basically impossible to replicate, right? Like, what could they do differently in this movie that would make it better than Lego Movie 1? The answer is basically nothing. And I enjoyed all the voice casts quite a bit. I like the little nod to Marvel in it because they have obviously all the DC heroes where they go like, yeah, we keep calling the Marvel guys, but they don't answer us because they don't have the rights to any of the Marvel characters for the Lego movie. I thought that was funny. Jason Momoa just literally just saying the line that we just keep yelling where he's just like, he has to yell and he says, my man. And that was a laugh out loud moment for me in my theater where it was an IMAX and just me and one other person. But I thought it was funny. And it's a very heartfelt message. And I think that's all you really want out of an animated kids movie.
Yeah, I get that. I compare it. I gave The Incredibles 2 a better score than this, but I compare it a lot to The Incredibles 2 where it's a sequel. You know, that was a longer awaited sequel, but they still made us wait 5 years for this one. And then you watched it and you're thinking to yourself, like, I'm enjoying this, but like something's not there. The magic of the original isn't there. I don't know. You know, maybe I shouldn't fault the movie for that. But at the same time, like an example of stuff that was grating for me is like, I really wish they didn't bring back Everything Is Awesome in this. The only time I felt like it really worked was at the end when they did the somber Fox sports injury music version of Everything Is Awesome. But other than that, it's just like, you know, give
what
us
about the new song.
Yeah. But the news, but that's where it tries to recapture it. But the new song is just so wink, wink about it. You know, like it's literally titled like, this is a catchy song or whatever.
Yeah, songs gonna get song. Stuck in your head.
Written partially by John LaJoy of
really
Show Me Your Genitals fame. Yep.
And The League.
Mm-hmm. So, like I'm saying, like maybe it's a harsh score on 70, and I still think it's a good movie. I'm still buttering it. But in terms of just like being a great animated movie, for me to put it at 80, I'd have to like put it up there. I forget what I gave Incredibles 2, but maybe like 85 or 90. Like it's not even grasping range of something like that.
Yeah,
like
I think
Incredibles 2? I didn't think it was that much worse than Incredibles 2.
I enjoyed Incredibles 2 a lot more, but that might also speak more to me enjoying the original Incredibles and the Lego movie itself. Like I did like the first time, but I don't think I would have even given the Lego movie a 94 like Jeff gave it. It probably would have been an 85 or something like that.
But also take into effect there, right? The Incredibles 2 had a 10-year gap between it, and this movie has had not only like what, like a 4-year gap or something, but like other Lego movies and maybe that might have factored into you. You think that would
score? I definitely think it factors into it. I mean, part of it, I mean, I'm taking it out of the score. Maybe it's fair or not, but part of it, the original Lego movie was the nostalgia of funny talking Legos. And by the time you watch the Batman movie, which I thought was really good, and you turn off Ninjago 35 minutes into the movie, and then you get to this movie, it kind of feels like that part of it has been wasted. So now all you have is a movie trying to stand on its own merits, which it does really well, but you just dock 15 points, right, for not being original, which it could be unfair, but like when you have a concept like the Lego movie, just like the Lego video games, it can only go so far. If they wanted to release the Lego Last of Us, like I would not play that. The novelty is them being Legos. It's like Lego Yoda going, block you will, master builder. Show me your pussy.
I actually like the Lego Batman movie better than this one. And I do agree with Kendrick. The message was pretty good. And I like the way they went with it, but it felt clunkier. Everything felt so naturally done. Like it flowed perfectly in the first one. And this one just felt a little rigid. Just wasn't quite all there. And I do think, again, I don't like pulling off from the predecessors for how I rate this one, but for in a series like you kind of have to sometimes. And I just think the self-referential stuff, it's lost its way a little bit for me, where I, looking at the movie, I use this a lot in a vacuum. I still laughed, but it's hard for me not to be like, ah, yeah, but like, this isn't as original. Like, this isn't as funny for me as it was in the last one and the one before that. So,
and you also, you had the exchange of some characters, you know, and love from the first Lego movie that they swapped out, you know, Charlie Day's character, Allison Brie's character, or Nick Offerman. I almost said Ron Swanson. Nick Offerman's character for Tiffany Haddish's character, who like was okay, but I like that original cast.
Yeah, I understand.
That's the curse of a sequel. You got to have more. It's got to be bigger. It's got to have higher stakes, and that's what they went for in this movie. And you know, it's okay.
I understand what you're saying, but I just don't like the comparison to, I guess, Incredibles 2, which I think was. Like, I think they're well within striking range, but I guess it really does come down to which franchise you like more. And I understand like the product proliferation, whatever element of that.
Yeah. You know, maybe it's a bad analogy, but I was more speaking in terms of like, I liked Incredibles 2 a lot less than Incredibles 1. And I think some of that has to do with like, when you saw Incredibles 1, you're like, oh, this is a superhero movie that's set in a very non-specific time period that kind of reminds you of the Atomic Age, but kind of could be later in the future, and they're also like a family and have this funny family dynamic. And then you get to Incredibles 2 and you're like, well, there's really nothing they can add on this that like wouldn't really just be the first movie. So it's at that point it's just like, well, you just get a standard sequel, and that's okay. And it's the curse of the sequel. It's just, that's why it's hard to do sequels. And I also think that's why this isn't doing as well at the box office.
Yeah, it's not. It's not doing well at the box office, which is kind of surprising. And I also, like you said, Trill, I think it has to do with the fact that it is a sequel, but it's also another sequel. And it's along the lines of other movies in this Lego franchise too. And I think that's kind of muddied the waters a bit, because at the box office, it's not doing what many thought it would do. It's getting good reviews for the most part on all the sites. No like terrible review aggregates anywhere. But yeah, like even like I'm looking at The Wrap, they had an article saying, did spinoffs hurt the sequel at the box office? Cause it's not making the money that it was supposed to make.
And I think that I want this movie to do very well. Don't get me wrong. Just cause I love Lord and Miller and I want them to have blank check to do whatever they need to do to keep making funny movies and funny concepts. And it's a solid sequel. It's just, it's a sequel, right? And it's tough to live up to the original. And I think sometimes it's tough to even come close to the original score, because so much of what made the original great was just the novelty of it. And you inherently do not get that in a sequel.
Yep. It made $34 million in its first 3 days. It was projected to make 55 to 60. So a bit of a disappointing return. But the Lego franchise not going away anytime soon, because I think they're making a Batman sequel. So Kendrick gave it an 84. I gave it an 82. Trill a 70. Our audience actually gave it a pretty high mark, 87 out of 100. Ooh. That's the current mark of the Lego movie. It may go down over the year. There are some movies that definitely went down over the year. This could be one of them as more and more people see it.
I also think, too, and I go back to Kenjack's point, because if Kenjack gave it 100, I would completely understand it. This is where it gets back to movies are a very personal preference, and some resonate more than others. I did not have a sibling growing up. That's right, folks. I was a creepy-ass only child. So some of those messages, like in terms of like what Kenjack was saying, I just can't relate to. That's fiction for me. People didn't grow up like that.
Lego Movie Part 2, the second part, the second one, 82 for me, 84 from Kenjack, 70 from Trill, 87 from our audience. We got one more thing to do here. We have our rankings. Top 10 worst Best Picture nominees since 1990. Since nine, we could have gone back further, but honestly, that's just too much effort. So we'll do movies that are firmly in this generation. Top 10 worst. We'll go Kenjack, myself, Trill, and then the audience. We're going to go 10 through 6, each of us, and then we'll go 5 through 1 individually. All right, Kenjack, number 10, worst Best Picture nominee since 1990.
My number 10 is, you guessed it, Up. Don't think Up should be nominated for Best Picture. Don't think that's fair at all.
Wow.
Don't think it should be up there. And that's all I got to say about that. More like down.
I disagree with you, but I also want to see the rest of your list, you know, because I think that could be fair.
I mean, I know you don't love Up, but wow.
Don't think it's a Best Picture movie.
Wow. Well, there's one on my list, hint, hint, from this year, which I don't think is either, but it is not even close to my top 15 or 20. There are so many movies more egregiously nominated for Best Picture. But hey, to watch an opinion list. We do need 10 through 6. I should declare for that. But go ahead, Trill.
Yeah, if you're going Pixar, I think Up deserved it more than Toy Story 3.
Ooh, well. See, now I'm on the other side of the fence. This is for a different discussion.
Okay.
And Jack, rest of your 10 through 6.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Number 9, Bridge of Spies. Just an aggressively average movie. And then Mark Rylance, God bless him, did not deserve Best Supporting Actor that year at all. Number 8, Chocolat. There's our Tim Burton callback. Remember we mentioned him earlier? Johnny Depp. Just not a great movie. Number 7, Seabiscuit. Number 6, War Horse. I'm just going to group them together. Horse movies suck. Fuck horses. Again, in a big way, fuck horses. Number 5.
Ten through 6.
Oh, yeah.
10 through 6, yeah. I like your 9 through 6 a lot. Great.
Yeah, me too.
Might be talking about some of them later on. My 10 through 6. Number 10, The Godfather Part 3. I actually don't think it's as bad as a lot of people say it is. People treat The Godfather Part 3 like it's one of the worst movies ever made sometimes, I feel like. They're like, oh, it's the bastard of the group. It's like, I mean, whatever. It should not have been nominated for Best Picture, especially in a year that Goodfellas was nominated as well and didn't win.
Yeah. I did like the ending scene when Sofia Coppola's character died. That was good. That was a good scene.
Never forget Dances with Wolves beat Goodfellas. Number 9, Crash. Crash, one of the most – this is the winner. This is the first winner we've mentioned. Crash was nominated alongside Brokeback Mountain, Capote, Good Night and Good Luck, Munich. And Crash was a well-intentioned movie that I just think was a complete fucking mess and somehow won Best Picture, especially over something like Brokeback Mountain or Capote. I love Good Night and Good Luck. Number 8, The Reader. I don't know anyone who saw The Reader, really. The Reader was a very bizarre movie. Kate Winslet was in The Reader. Hugh Jackman made fun of The Reader at the Oscars. We posted a pretty funny Hugh Jackman opening clip on our social media pages where he did the low-budget opening musical number and joked about no one seeing The Reader. The Reader was a really weird World War II movie. That's all I'll say on that. Number 7, The Prince of Tides. Barbra Streisand. Just an over-the-top, in-your-face, overindulgent movie. With mediocre acting, mediocre story. Barbra Streisand directed it. Everything just kind of sticks out like a sore thumb in this movie. It's not like the worst movie of all time and definitely not the worst nominee, but it's pretty bad. It's brutal in terms of being compared to Best Picture nominees. So Prince of Tides, number 7. A movie that I think has really bad acting in it and some of the worst acting on any of these movies, The Cider House Rules. Do not like The Cider House Rules. I just don't love the acting. I don't like Charlize Theron in this movie. I don't like Tobey Maguire at all in this movie. I don't like Michael Caine in this movie. But this director will be on this list again. So we'll get to that. But The Cider House Rules is just not a good movie. I think the acting for how many good actors in the movie? Terrible. And it was nominated for Best Picture. So though, that's my 10 through 6. Yeah, that's true. That's my 10 through 6.
My number 10 is Aaron Brockovich. Not a horrible movie. Not a great Oscar movie. Really got a lot of buzz off of a good performance by Julia Roberts. But as a movie, it was very similar, I think, to what's 8 on my list. But what's 9 is Benjamin Button. Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I didn't think this was that great of a movie either. Like some of these movies I think are good movies. But in comparison to these other Oscar movies, they're not. But I just didn't like Benjamin Button at all. It was stupid. It was long. It's like you get the concept in the first 5 minutes. You're like, okay, like I got it. 8 is The Blind Side. Blind Side's a movie a lot of people like, and for good reason. It is a very good popcorn movie, but it is not an Oscar-worthy movie. Very popular movie. Number 7, Les Mis. I did not like Les Mis. But the singing was bad from a lot of characters, Russell Crowe specifically.
Especially Russell Crowe.
Yeah. I thought some of the production was pretty cool, but just in terms of like being a musical on a movie screen, didn't really do it for me. And then number 6 is Seabiscuit. And that's like in that Aaron Brockovich Blindside category where it's just a really solid popcorn flick that somehow gets nominated for a Best Picture for some reason and just isn't as good as the contemporaries in their cohort.
Yep. That's a pretty good diverse list. Actually, all three of these so far, very diverse. Have we had any repeats? I don't think we have.
Yeah, me and Trill.
Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit.
Oh, yeah, Seabiscuit. Okay, one repeat. Yeah. Some good list so far. The audience, 10 through 6, worst Best Picture nominees since 1990. Number 10, I'm surprised by a couple of these. Juno.
That's
a bit misplaced. Really?
I like Juno. Surprised by that. But I get it. I kind of get it, even though I like it.
That was that was the buzzy movie of that year.
It was. American Sniper, number 9.
Wow.
The Chris Kyle movie. Bradley Cooper, Clint Eastwood, made a lot of money. American Hustle, number 8. I am one of the people who actually doesn't mind American Hustle all that much, but I know a lot of people fucking hate American Hustle. And American Hustle was supposed to be an awards darling and didn't win shit at the Oscars. Number 7. I don't get this one. Babe. Pig in the City. Babe, regular pig. I liked Babe. Babe was, what's wrong with Babe? What are we shitting on Babe for?
Against the, like, in the best picture category, though, I think
put a list of 200 fucking movies. Babe is nowhere near one of the worst.
Movie about a talking pig.
Babe's not on my list, but I feel like this one got on because of the great execution of the talking pig for the time it was released.
Yeah, you got to fix. What were the other movies nominated the same year?
The year Babe was nominated, which I believe was 1995. That's Babel. Braveheart, which is actually considered not great.
I mean, think about it this way. You put a talking pig next to Braveheart for Best Picture. That's going to ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, but Brave, there's a lot of people who think Braveheart's one of the worst movies to win Best Picture.
That's wrong.
And then Sense and Sensibility, I think Apollo 13. Apollo 13 was probably what should have won that year. But Babe was up there. I was surprised. I mean, I know Braveheart isn't, you know, the fucking Godfather, Goodfellas, but there are people who think Braveheart's one of the worst Best Picture winners. And then number 6, I thought this would be top 5, but it's number 6. Not by much. It just missed out on top 5. Crash. Crash at number 6. Ken Jack, number 5 worst Best Picture nominees since 1990.
I'll keep it short and sweet. The Artist. It is a pretentious, like, suck your own dick movie for Hollywood, and I just did not care for it one bit. The fact that it won was a travesty, and I hated it, and I don't think it should have been nominated. And I get why it was. I just do not think it was a good movie.
Yeah, The Artist isn't on my list. I mean, I thought it was a really well-made movie. I would even say it was a good movie, but it annoyed me that it won. I think because of the pretentiousness of what it is. Mm-hmm. It's more of a Hollywood love fest than La La Land was. And I understand that La La Land is one of my favorite movies of all time, but it just bothered me. And it's very well made. And shout out to Jean Dujardin, the guy who won Best Actor. And I don't know if he's been in a movie since The Artist. I don't know what he's done since then. If he's been in anything like, I think he was in, was he in Wolf of Wall Street? I think he was.
Sure.
But anyway, he did win Best Actor. It's the only like notable thing he's done in his career. It was good. One of my family friends said it's an okay silent movie. Like, that's what it is. It's an okay silent movie.
It's a low bar to clear.
Yeah. But film buffs love silent movies, so I won't hate about that.
Yeah, and we're big film buffs here.
But The Artist, yes. I think that's a pretty decent pick. My pick, number 5. This is the first appearance for Sir Johnny Depp. Is he a sir? I don't want to wrongfully knight him. He hasn't been knighted, has he?
He is certainly terrible.
Okay. Finding Neverland.
Oh, shit. I should have
nominated
that.
For
I
Best
like
Picture.
That.
Oh, come on.
No, it tickled the right buttons for me, my friend.
Oh, about the author J.M. Barrie. Is that his name? I don't fucking care. Him writing Peter Pan shit, and It's a corny fucking cheese fest. It's like a really good Hallmark movie. Million Dollar Baby won that year. The Aviator, Ray, and Sideways were nominated. Sideways should have won. I fucking love Sideways. Finding Neverland. Kate Winslet, another Kate Winslet movie. Dustin Hoffman's in it.
That list of nominees might be the worst all-time roster Best Picture nominations per year.
No, we haven't looked at. We haven't. The only reason I didn't deep dive into The Artist year yet is because we're going to get to something on The Artist. 2011 for me is still the worst.
Okay, fair enough.
Though that is a weak list. I will die in the grave of fucking Sideways being great. But yeah, Finding Neverland, I thought it was just I'm going to save a word I want to use for my next movie, but it's a fucking corny ass
fart
movie with he was like, they'll always wake up a day older. Don't put them to sleep. Shut the fuck up. Shut up, nerd. Trill, number 5.
My number 5 is Crash. The only actual winner to be on my list. I just didn't think Crash was that great. I didn't think it was that bad, but it just was, people loved it. People loved it when it was released. They loved the structure of it. A lot of stuff going on in this movie. I will say, I think my boy Brendan Fraser's in this one.
Sure is.
So some points there. But other than that, it wasn't that great of a movie.
They, you want to see award season buzz and like momentum. Crash was it. Crash is like the poster boy for award season momentum. It picked up so much fucking steam and then just no pun intended, crash right into the Oscars with big
that
success.
That scene with Michael Pena and the store owner or whatever it was at the end where like he thinks he shot him. Go back and watch that. Not that great.
Crash right from the onset though of it winning, people were like, what the fuck? Why did this win? That is a good pick. I thought it would be much higher on the audience list. It is not in my top five, but I mean I had it at number nine. Audience number five, speaking of James Cameron, Avatar. I do think Avatar was deserving of a Best Picture nomination. I mean, I don't know. It did innovative things though. I really can't fault James Cameron. It did enough, I think, to get the nomination. Ken Jack, number four.
My number four is A Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Trill hit all the major notes on it. It was certainly not a terrible movie, but it was nowhere near deserving of Best Picture nomination. And I get why Hollywood, or rather the Academy, would want to put it in there, but like it was just not good enough of a movie to be up there.
It's a funny case of how fast technology evolves because...
More like a curious case.
Yeah, it's a very curious case of how technology evolves because when that was released, everybody was obsessed with the aging techniques and the de-aging techniques. And now they basically use that in like a Sprint commercial. And it's even better.
My number four, The Blind Side. The Blind Side for me. I agree with Trill. I wanted to use this word with Finding Neverland, but since this movie's higher up my list, I have to use it with this one. And that is schmaltzy. This is a fucking schmaltzy, sensationalist movie that overplays its cards. The story's fine, but it's also propped up on some like falsities too. So it kind of makes you feel like, yeah, like even Michael Orr was like, that's not true.
Oh, he never played football ever.
Never did. This is The Blind Side is Bohemian Rhapsody before Bohemian Rhapsody came out. That's how I'm characterizing it. Like just for what it is, audiences fucking loved The Blind Side. Middle America loved The Blind Side.
Well, Blind Side was good. It's a good movie, but
it's fine. It doesn't deserve Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, it was one of those buzzy movies they throw in there to get a broader audience to watch the Oscars because their favorite movie of the year is up for nomination with all these like stuffy French movies that are named like Le Bateau.
There should be a sign that says clap now throughout The Blind Side. Like it just fucking tees up every moment that you're supposed to love. And The Blind Side did come in the year that they expanded the list to. It was nominated alongside Avatar, The Hurt Locker, District 9, and Education, and Glorious Bastards, Precious, based on the novel Pushed by Sapphire, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. And then they changed their voting process, I think, either the year after this or the year after that, partly because of The Blind Side. So The Blind Side, number four on my list. Trill, what about you, number four?
Number four is The Reader. There's really not much to say about this movie other than it was not fun.
It's just not fun.
And not fun and not really that good of a movie. Some of these other movies, like The Blind Side, would much rather watch The Blind Side than The Reader. Even for as schmaltzy as we make fun of them just because we know more about them, The Reader is just something that is boring through and through.
It's just like the whole Nazi war crime thing with their character.
Just take a shitty story and put it in a very tense and important historical time and you got a stew cooking, baby.
Number four for the audience. They agree with Ken Jack, The Artist. The Artist does appear again. Ken Jack, number three.
A very recent movie, near and dear to our hearts. Can you guess it?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
No.
Oh. Ooh. I don't know.
It's from the Academy a year before.
So last year?
Yes.
Last year. Phantom Thread.
No, that was...
The Post. The Post. Yes.
Got it. Nailed it. The Post. The Post is just another, much on the line of Bridge of Spies, just an aggressively average movie that depends on like sentiment, popular sentiment of the time to make it good. And like, just it's not. It's just not a good movie. It's not... Just because you have Tom Hanks and... God damn it, Meryl Streep in your fucking movie doesn't mean it's good. That was the only thing they counted on, and it just I never registered that at any point during that film that it was an Oscar-worthy movie, and yet there it was.
Don't just compare it to Bridge of Spies, because compare it to the other Steven Spielberg movie on your list in War Horse, too. They all speak the same language. They really do.
Exactly, just poopy.
My number three is a Steven Spielberg movie, War Horse.
Hell yeah. Fuck them horses.
It is more Oscar baity than The Post and Bridge of Spies. Bridge of Spies is not much Oscar bait as The Post and War Horse. It's just too much. War Horse is too much beat you over the head, fucking exposition and just over the top narrative. The war, it's boring. It is so fucking boring. It feels so long. War Horse had no business being nominated for Best Picture. Incredible Broadway show, apparently, though.
Really?
Great.
Do they have
play.
A live horse? Or
they have like a guy with the horse. It's like Lion King.
Three guys who each represent a different part of the horse.
It's just Justin Theroux.
And a guy riding it who represents war. It's really deep.
But they have the Lion King thing with like sticks and shit to move the horse around the stage. It was nominated with that's 2011. We're still going to get 2011 in a minute. That's a crazy year for nominees. Trollbones number three.
Number three is extremely loud and incredibly close.
Hell yeah.
Not a good movie. I'll let you guys tackle it because I'm sure it's on your list.
Yeah, not going to make any.
Jeff is more passionate about hating this movie, but it's just not a good movie.
Not there yet. Number three for the audience: Bohemian Rhapsody. Freddie Mercury and Brian May make their debut on this list. Ken Jack, number two, worst Best Picture nominee since 1990.
All right, my number two. You will actually guess this one, I think, pretty easily.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, correct. Bohemian Rhapsody. That movie, the more and more I sit on it, the more I get mad about it, because it is not a great movie. It's like barely a good movie. And to put it up here with some real fucking titans in cinema is really, it frustrates me more and more. Especially, and we were looking at this clip yesterday, Jeff, the one where the editing of the scene where they meet Littlefinger's character. It is unreal how poorly edited parts of this film were. And like, I think the movie for me, like if you took out the Live Aid sequence, that movie drops 25 points in score. Like it very heavily on that. And outside of it, just not great. And I get why people love it. And I get why it's a popular movie, but that doesn't mean it's a great movie. Like it's just not. And it is frustrating. And that's why it's number two.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to pass and give it to you. I have to save any more takes I have for the Oscars.
Well, yeah, it's my number two movie too. So
okay.
We can just skip myself on this while we're talking about it. Let's just get it out of our system. It's this year's Blindside, I feel like, or other movie that is or Crash, a very, very popular, very mainstream movie put in there to generate interest, except for whatever reason, instead of just generating interest, like in the same way Sandra Bullock won for her character in The Blind Side, I think, like Rami Malek keeps winning for this. And Sandra Bullock has had better performances than her character in The Blind Side.
Yep. The Blind Side was Bohemian Rhapsody before Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm sticking with that. My number two, Johnny Depp. He makes his second appearance on this list with Chuck a Lot. The only thing good for Chuck a Lot that it has going still is the fact that it was referenced in I Love You, Man.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Like, that's the only positive thing I can think about this movie. This movie is, I mean, it baffles me that this was nominated for Best Picture. It really does. It truly baffles me that this is a Best Picture nominee. It's the fucking weird, like, I wouldn't call her horny, but it's like the female horny Willy Wonka, like trying to make people's lives and their relationships better with chocolate. And then like the whole part of the movie where they're like, get the chocolate lady out of our town. They're like, get rid of the chocolate lady. All the religious people. It's just very, very bland. It does nothing. I really don't like Chuck a Lot. There's nothing about it delightful. And I hope that's all in jest. And I love you, man. The bad chocolate lady. Run the chocolate lady out of our town. Gladiator won the year that this was nominated. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Aaron Brockovich, and Traffic were nominated that year in 2000 as well. Chuck a Lot. Number one, worst Best Picture nominee since 1990. Ken Jack.
My number one is extremely loud and incredibly close. And I think you, who was it that had it on their list a minute ago?
Trill already had it.
Me.
Yeah, Trill already had it. I think it was not a very great movie, and I didn't enjoy the adventure aspect of it. Like, there's movies that touch on 9/11. World Trade Center one with Nick Cage and Michael Pena. I like that one. And then there's movies where they added as an element, like what was the Robert Pattinson one where that was the end of the movie.
Oh, geez. What was that called?
Remember Me.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So, like, there's movies where they slightly touch on it or make it about that. Like, 9/11, in this case, they used it as a way to, like, generate, like, sympathy for the character and use that as the way to kick off an adventure for this kid, which to me is a wild move. And it felt like there's a scene in or this part in American Dad where Roger, like, James Bond spinoff, and the villain's motivation, like, or plan, is that he makes a movie called Oscar Gold, and he just puts in every trope to make people cry so that they cry so hard they cry to death. And that's what this movie felt like for me. Like, the whole movie is about, like, a kid in the Holocaust who, like, is an alcoholic and has a puppy, but the puppy dies, and, like, he triumphs over it and everything. Like, it's insanity to me, where, like, they didn't have anything in mind for this other than sort of, like, trying to exploit whatever they could to make people cry.
It's weird. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what, and not interesting, but just like a morbid interest to see what happens with 9/11 movies in the future, because, you know, we're going on the 18th year since it's legal adult this year. And, you know, the further they get away from it when it's, you know, 2035, like, what, like, how are they going to use elements of that to make a dramatic movie? Because at that point, they'll be able to do something like they did with Pearl Harbor, which is a horrible movie, and just make it completely fictional, not fictionalized, but just over exaggerated version of it. I don't know if that makes sense, but, like, it's still something that, like, is a very formative moment in my life. And, like, I understand making a movie about
Pearl Harbor. Oh, wait,
no, 9/11. I mean, like, you know, I was like, everybody, like, I was 17 years old and, like, I wasn't directly impacted, but, like, just, I remember almost everything about that day, like watching it on TV screens, chemistry class in high school, and just like wondering what was going to happen next, because it was really the worst thing I saw. And it was it happened at like the right time where like just at the start of the digital media age, where there are enough cameras around to see it from every angle. And I'm just really curious of how like movies are going to tackle it going forward. Like, is there going to be a loss of interest at some point, or is it going to be something where, like, historically people get interested in an event again, and there's a rash of 9/11 movies in 2040. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make sense, but it's just like, it's a topic. We talk about it here. It's like, you never want to say a topic's off limits for a movie. And I don't think it is, but I do think it's one of those things where it's still fresh in so many people's minds. And it's such a real and tangible thing that you got to be like really careful about how you handle it. And just to put it in this movie as a plot device was kind of weird. I don't think it was awful. I don't think they did like a terrible job, but it just seemed unnecessary.
And it didn't make the movie better. It didn't make the movie better.
No, it didn't, because the movie was about this kid dealing with his grief, and this was thrown in as something that had happened that everybody knew of, but it could, you know, it could have like happened around everything else, anything else, any other traumatic event. It didn't have to be that.
Fuck this movie. 48 out of 100. This is not even close. This isn't even close for me. It's like it's number one on my list by like 15 points. This movie was weird as shit. Kenjack nailed it perfectly. It was like the launching point for the story using 9/11 was just odd move. The story itself is bizarre and strange. A lot of it doesn't make sense. The ending wrap up is almost like disturbing. I don't quite get some of it. Some of it doesn't make any sense. Way over the top. Major Oscar bait. Like, offensively Oscar baity. Like, you, again, using 9/11. I mean, you're fucking spot on, Trill. It's like, I hate this movie. This was hands down the most egregious Oscar nominee for me. Not even close. This makes Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, for you guys having it number two, or for me, chuck a lot. It makes it look like a shoo-in from the second it was released for Best Picture. Like, this movie is offensively bad in terms of Best Picture nominees. 48 out of 100. I mean, the movies I should have been nominated over, I was looking at the list. 2011, I'll finally get to the 2011 nominees list. The Artist, The Descendants, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, The Tree of Life, which nobody said I was surprised, and then War Horse. That's a bad list of nominees. That's a bad list of nominees.
It is terrible.
Movies that were higher on my list than a lot of those for me, 50-50, Drive, Win-Win with Paul Giamatti, Deathly Hallows Part 2 I had up higher. This fucking strange, weird movie that Max von Sydow got a nomination for this movie. He didn't have one speaking line in this movie. Remember, he wrote everything. He wrote everything down, or he had tattoos, yes or no tattoos no. on his hands or something. Oh, oh, this movie pisses me off for many reasons. You outlined many of them, but
Who, me or Kenjack?
Both of you.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm just like, you know, it goes back to, I think you can have a debate on it. It's like, how do you tastefully use something that, I mean, can be used in a movie and is like a very dramatic and traumatic event, but I don't think this was it.
No, like, I think it even goes beyond the taste. I think it just was not good.
It just was
the story.
Yeah, it was using it, like Kenjack was saying, to just like put it around something that would then like try to make it something deeper than it was. Like, and that framework doesn't necessarily work. It had no connection other than the catalyst for this kid's grief.
Oh boy, movie really bothers me. Anyway, Trey, what's your number one?
My number one is Moulin Rouge. The movie sucks, dude.
I looked at Chicago and Moulin Rouge because they were nominated in back-to-back years. And I actually thought to myself, I wonder what Trill thinks about these. I don't know if we've talked about these movies.
I truly think Moulin Rouge was the first time people got a taste of mashups, I feel like. Because I remember in the soundtrack Cannot Talk, there was like something where they mixed up Lady Marmalade with Smells Like Teen Spirit and some other things. I think people thought this movie was a lot cooler than it was. And you know what it reminds me of? Something we mentioned earlier in the podcast, the whole Beatles movie, that like fantastical music mashup of a movie that it wasn't actually a movie. Shout out though, like one of the better performances with Nicole Kidman, where her character has tuberculosis.
I kind of like that movie. I didn't hate it.
No laughs on that one. That one.
No, I just thought you were going on a rant.
No, it's just. I just don't think it was a good movie. Baz Luhrmann is an acquired taste. You go over his filmography, you know, he did Romeo and Juliet, which some people like a lot. I didn't like that one. The Great Gatsby, and they did some other stuff. But Moulin Rouge, I thought was really weak. I didn't think it was a good movie at all. I thought it was really bizarre. It's in Best Picture land. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that the staging this as a musical with some of the cooler things they maybe did with the soundtrack made people think better of it than it actually was.
Number one for the audience, The Blind Side.
Okay, fair enough.
Yep, The Blind Side, number one. That's it. That's our list. There's a couple others that didn't make my list. You know, I thought of Darkest Hour, really. I didn't like it all from last year. I don't like Gangs of New York. I'm sorry if that offends. I don't like Gangs of New York. Daniel Day-Lewis is fucking amazing. Everything else I didn't love. Looked cool. Yeah. He was great. I didn't like much else in that movie.
The song U2 did for that soundtrack sucks, dude. The Hands That Build America. And I don't know. Go listen to it. It's pretty weak. It's like when U2 started switching over to their whole like mid-2000s phase.
Tree of Life, Forrest Gump, Ghost, A Beautiful Mind.
Well, so... Now let's compare and contrast, though. So Bohemian Rhapsody was on most people's lists. It's not a good movie, but how does that stack up against Ray? Because you can make similar points that Bohemian Rhapsody did something similar with Ray. I happen to think Ray was a pretty good movie. I think it was deeper than Bohemian Rhapsody, and I was more impressed with Jamie Foxx's performance as Ray Charles, because I think him acting and actually singing was more impressive than Rami Malek basically green screening him on to Wembley Stadium, but whatever.
Yeah. But imagine if they did that with Ray, like they're like, yeah, he actually decided like he got blinded when he was like 20 or something. Like they just switched around historical events in it. You probably like it less, yeah. Right?
No, I mean, yeah, that's definitely fair. I think it's funny how Ray marked what I thought was like the start or close to start of the whole biopic era. And hopefully Bohemian Rhapsody has closed it off. But not really though. Cause you have the Elton John one, Rocket Man, coming out. So maybe people still keep eating these up. I happen to have stopped enjoying these musical biopics.
I like Ray. I agree with you on the Ray comparison to Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't think Ray's amazing. I don't think it's like great, like 90 or above, but I think what Jamie Foxx did with Ray, I think, is far more impressive than what Rami Malek did with the good performances as Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, I agree there. I think it's funny, what, 15 years later, you know, you still have a musical biopic in there and like one actually was good, but I think some of it was just like coming out and being one of the first big mainstream ones. And then this one, I don't know though, from a mass market standpoint, people seem to like Bohemian Rhapsody. So I think I'm just talking out of my own ass.
No, but there's a difference between that though. Like, it doesn't matter if like the main amount of audiences like it, that doesn't make it a good movie, right? Like Transformers gets like 90%, right?
But The Blind Side is that example. That's why I keep saying The Blind Side, I think, is what Bohemian Rhapsody was before Bohemian Rhapsody became what it is now. And again, I mean, the 79, it's the most 79 out of 100 movie I've ever seen in my life. And that's taking out the historical inaccuracies. I said not even factoring that in. Like, it's, the movie's not edited all that great. It just doesn't do anything. It doesn't do or say anything. It's just there. It's an okay movie.
Queen's about the band.
It's close to being a good movie, but it doesn't land in the stratosphere. My rants about this, because I talked about this at work, because Ken, Jack, and I were accused at work of hating this movie. And I was like, I don't hate it. My rant comes in the fact that it's being put up there with other incredibly well-made movies, great movies from this year. That's where it pisses me off. But I'll save that rant, because you're going to hear it again, I'm sure, next week during the Oscars. That's it, though.
I went one-on-one with Portnoy in the office, which is actually probably very dumb. I recant that. I know you're listening, Dave. I recant my statement.
Yes, all of our future endeavors are now closed.
Yeah.
all right, that's it. Anything else before we wrap this up?
I think that's it, man.
Oscar nominations are going to drop on Sunday, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. I'm going to go take some NyQuil and pass out.
Feel better.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I will.
Do you still want to do your signature close?
Yeah, I'll do it.
You're not going to call in for a reliever?
No. Oh, do you want to do it, King Jack? You want to try it?
No, I definitely don't want to take that. No. Steal that valor. No, no
you could never do that. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office, thanks.
Throw it away in the dirt, yeah. Gonna shake, throw it away in the dirt, yeah. Gonna shake, throw it away in the dirt, yeah. Gonna shake.